Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Robert Winfrey. I want to thank you all again for being here. Might be the first time I've thanked you this show, but much appreciated. I'm well aware of all the choices you have for MMA-related content, a lot of podcasts, some of which you should actually check out, and a number of which are better that I listen to for, you know, ideas to improve this show. Some of which are worse. There's a few. Not a whole lot, but this is kind of a bare bones operation here. But we do the best we can, and we thank you all for your patronage. It's much appreciated. All right, tonight we will be discussing previewing UFC Fight Night 109. It's coming your way next Sunday. The UFC is returning to Sweden, and because they have only one Swede that they really promote, they're bringing Alexander Gustafsson in the main event. He's fighting Glover Teixeira, and we'll be talking about that. And the rest of the card, it's a rough one, guys. The fight I was actually most looking forward to on that card fell out a few days ago. Mirabek Taisimov was supposed to fight on that card, and I'm a pretty significant believer in his skills. But he got injured and unable to make the fight. So I now have, again, that was the only fight on that card I was personally looking forward to with any sense of anticipation. I hope they're good fights. I really, really do. And again, we'll be going over that. We wound up skipping news last week because of our late start time. Thanks again, Comcast. As well as Mother's Day celebrations I had to get to. So we'll be going over news. As well, just a lot of the basics here. If you have a question or a comment that you'd like to get on the air, by all means, feel free to call in. The number to do so is 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. Jeff sent me a message a little bit ago. He's running a little bit late. He will be calling in as soon as he's available. I'm happy to have him on. As soon as he's ready and able, he'll be calling in, so for fans of Jeff, just be patient. He'll be on in a bit. All right, let's start this off. Again, Fight Night 109. Again, taking place in Sweden. Which venue? The Royal Arena. All right, in Copenhagen. No, wait, Denmark. Oh, no, sorry. They were thought about this one being in Denmark. UFC's never been to Denmark, huh? Anyway, my apologies to the Ericsson Globe in Stockholm, Sweden. I misread that. Now, they've been to Sweden a couple of times. So it should be interesting. It will be taking place Sunday evening in Norway. I'm on my game tonight, guys, I promise. Sweden. Which means it's going to start very early in the morning here. The first prelim starts at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So for all of you on the West Coast, on Pacific Time, 6:30 in the morning for the first prelim on Fight Pass. 7:30 here where I live. And, it'll be the standard, I believe, 6-hour broadcast from start to finish. Assuming nothing else falls out between now and then. That'll be rough. I hate mornings. I am not a morning person, so that's going to be rough. But as a minor programming note, because the card is on Sunday, It will end before our start time for the show here of 8 p.m. Eastern Standard. So I'll be covering that and then jump on here to talk about it. And we'll be previewing UFC 212 next week as well, which I looked at that card. There's a couple of decent fights, but they're really banking on Aldo and Holloway to hold together. I mean, if Aldo or Holloway falls out, and I do not subscribe to the Conor McGregor, you know, Aldo falls out all the time nonsense, because it's just not true. I mean, I've said this before, Chris Weidman pulled out of the same number of fights as Jose Aldo did during their respective UFC title reigns. Chris Weidman's title reign lasted a significantly shorter period of time than Jose Aldo's. But fights fall through all the time. If Aldo and Holloway falls through, UFC 212's new main event would be Claudia Gadelha and Karolina Kowalkiewicz. Now, that's a fine fight. I don't hate that fight. But they're really banking on Aldo and Holloway to sell the pay-per-views there. The loss of Anderson Silva on that card actually hurt as well. I mean, Silva's not the biggest draw in the world, but he's a notable attraction, especially for the live venue in Rio. So that they're really praying that fight holds together. Anyway, sorry, minor programming note. On to Gustafsson versus Teixeira. I mean, I'm really struggling to find a way Teixeira wins this fight as I think about it. Alexander Gustafsson is a very good fighter. He went 5 rounds with John Jones, and a lot of people, there was a vocal group of people who thought he won that fight. I took a lot of crap for my scoring of that fight, some of which I deserved, some of which I didn't, and I generally stand by it. But he was the first guy to really push John Jones. Then he went 5 rounds with Cormier, and there's a much more compelling argument that he won the DC fight. It was a split decision, as I recall. I scored it for Cormier, I think. But that's a one round decides that fight. It was a very competitive fight. This is a guy who is a championship caliber fighter and has proven himself as such. The worst loss of his career is to Anthony Johnson, who knocked him out in the first round. Now, some of that's just bad style. You know, Gustafsson's not the most defensively responsible fighter in the world. And Anthony Johnson, I mean, he's retired now, but he hit like a truck. And I know Glover hits hard, but I don't think he has the same type of, you know, power that Johnson did. Does. I mean, he's retired, so I'll refer to him in the past tense more often than not, but forgive me if I switch that up a little bit. He hits hard, but he doesn't have the power. He doesn't have the diversity either. Glover Teixeira is a really good gatekeeper, upper-level gatekeeper heavyweight. He and Ryan Bader, for the longest time, I referred to as the, you know, the guards of the caste system in this particular division. Teixeira knocked out Bader, but he got lit up a little bit prior to that. And then he got, you know, ragdolled by Phil Davis. Teixeira does have good power, but his striking is predictable. His setups primarily consist of dipping a little bit to his left, launching either a straight right or an overhand right. And because it comes from John Hackelman's camp, more often than not, it's an overhand. And then following that up with a left hook. That's the setup he uses. That's the combination he uses. That's what he's comfortable with. Unfortunately, he plants very hard when throwing that right. It's Phil Davis constantly ducked it to get the clinch or a double leg and then just, you know, out-grappled and out-rode him. He's also relatively hittable. Johnson knocked him out with that uppercut because he was dipping to try and throw the right. Now, Gustafsson doesn't have the same power that Johnson does, but he's a very accurate puncher and a very dynamic puncher as well. There's a lot more angles and facets to his game than there are to Teixeira's. I really am struggling to see Teixeira win this fight. Teixeira's got good wrestling, good takedowns, and a really good submission game. but much better wrestlers and much better grapplers than Glover Teixeira have failed to force Alexander Gustafsson into those positions. I mean, Cormier was able to take him down, I think, once. The bulk of that fight was contested on the feet. Jones struggled to get him down. And both of them are vastly superior MMA wrestlers to Glover. I'm just really not sure, again, where Glover can realistically win this fight. I think Gustafsson is going to be able to fight him at distance, because Gustafsson's a big man. I think he's going to fight him at distance. I think he's going to tune him up, again, fighting at distance, and probably finish him before we go all five rounds. I mean, he doesn't have one-shot power, but he's a very busy striker, and I think he'll wear him down. This is not a gimme necessarily, but they're trying to work Gustafsson back towards the title mix pending the outcome of Jones and Cormier. And this is a good fight to build towards that, because Teixeira is a former title challenger, legitimate opponent, and a very safe fight for Gustafsson, provided he doesn't get into a crazy brawl. And I don't think he will. Gustafsson's a well-schooled fighter. But yeah, I got Gustafsson TKO third or fourth, probably. I won't be shocked if this goes the distance, but I just feel like, again, with Gustafsson's diversity, his volume, and Teixeira's generally lackluster defense, I feel like this is... this one has Gustafsson all over it. Unless he's really fallen off. He's coming off of an injury, I seem to recall. Yeah, Gustafsson had a leg injury. These two were supposed to fight in 2015. So the rebuilding of Gustafsson slowly after that really rough stretch where he fought, Jones and then Johnson. He fought Jones, Manoa, then Johnson and Cormier. He beat Manoa, but those other three were tough losses. They were hard fights. I mean, both the Jones and Cormier fights, however you score them, were clearly physically demanding. Those were wars. I mean, Jones and Gustafsson is still, I think, the best light heavyweight title fight ever in the UFC, at least. A tremendous fight. But they eased him back with Jan Blachowicz, which was a very, very easy fight. A wide gulf in talent there. And he should get by Teixeira, and that should get him title shot at the winner of Jones and Cormier, assuming that fight, A, actually happens. And given Cormier's age and injuries, who knows? And given B, John Jones being outside of the cage, John Jones, he might be able to step in for that one not very short notice, but if something happens and he wins here, he might be on deck. And certainly after the fact, if that fight happens without some kind of shenanigans or disputed finish, then he could get the next title shot. This division is in such a bad spot. I mean, it's almost comical. It is legitimately almost comical how terrible this division is right now. And I will provide further evidence to support that. The co-main event. Top-ranked light heavyweight. Oh, God. I got to double-check that he's... Because for a while, Volkan Oezdemir was, I believe, a top-five light heavyweight. I'm not sure if that's still the case. I need to double check this. No, he's still number five. This is the dumbest thing ever. This is the dumbest thing ever. Volkan Oezdemir has one fight in the UFC. He defeated Ovince St. Preux, a split decision. Which put him near the top five. Because he just took over OSP's spot at, I believe, six or seven. Then Ryan Bader left and Anthony Johnson retired. And ta-da, top five. Ugh. Shogun is still number four, despite, his position at the moment. Little Nog, Rogério Nogueira, who, legitimate fighter. But he had to pull out of a fight recently with another injury. He hasn't fought in a while. He lost his last fight pretty badly. He got smoked by Bader, if my memory is holding up there. Still number 10 in the UFC. This division is awful. It's just awful. Anyway, Volkan Oezdemir, number 5 in the UFC. One fight, split decision win. Not even a good fight. Like, not even a contested, you know, back and forth split decision in a great fight. That fight kind of sucked. He's fighting Misha Cirkunov, who is pretty much the only real prospect who's moving from prospect to contender in a hurry. The other guy on that discussion is Corey Anderson, but Anderson just got, you know, wrecked by Jimmy Manoa, so there's some questions there. Misha Cirkunov has never lost in the UFC, has not lost at all since 2012. Jeez. Almost 5 years. Over 5 years. It was March of 12. Undefeated for 5 years. It's a heck of a thing. He knocked out Daniel Jolly. He broke Alex Nicholson's jaw with that neck crank, which is still awesome. It's a fan of violence. Submitted Iwan Kutelaba. Submitted Nikita Krylov. This guy's the real deal. Had that brief contract dispute with the UFC, but he's back, and now he's fighting a top 5 guy. I can't believe that I have to say, this division is terrible. It's just sad on so many levels. So many. Look, Oezdemir got that win, big win, but I think he's in over his head here. OSP has some good elements to his game. He's an athletic guy. He's got power. He's got a decent top game. His wrestling is a little iffy, but his top game is pretty good. And especially if he's able to, you know, kind of posture. His ground and pound has demonstrated itself to be pretty scary at times. But he's never really developed real mastery of mixing the disciplines, or even a real specialization in any of them. He's just kind of pretty good. And Misha Cirkunov, I think, is going to run him over. And run him over might be a bit of a overstatement, but Cirkunov's a good striker, got good power. Not exceptional, but good. He can strike. But his grappling game is really, really good. And that's where he excels, is when he can get you on the mat. He has very good passing. He has very good setups for his submissions. It's not arm in. I think I heard it called a head and arm guillotine. As opposed to an arm in, which is the arm on the other side trying to block you, and it's a different finishing technique. Instead of stretching out like you do with no arms, if you're just under the neck with that choke, you pull back to get more leverage. If you have one arm, you actually want to compress instead of pull back. But getting the arm on the same side, you know, trapped between their head and your body, I believe it's just a head. And I've heard it called a lot of different things depending on where you are. But I think head and arm guillotine is kind of what I arrived at. The way he set that up versus Krylov was very nice. It's very solid fighter, very exceptional grappler, especially for that division. You don't get a lot of really good submission specialists at 205. You get a lot of good wrestlers and grapplers. You know, John Jones, Daniel Cormier. Those guys are exceptional grapplers, and I don't mean to imply otherwise. But there's not big submission guys quite the same way that Cirkunov is, especially for a man of his size. It's relatively rare. I'm not sure Oezdemir can stop Cirkunov. I think Cirkunov will close distance, get him down, and display superiority on the ground again and move on to a title eliminator fight. I mean, he's it. You know, he is the one guy you have with getting some upward mobility in this division. And I don't know who he fights next specifically, but, you know, again, he's the guy that's making that move. So I imagine that's what's in his future. And again, a shockingly consistent guy. So that's your co-main event. And boy, oh boy, is it only getting worse from here on out. All right, next up, Peter Sabata. Good old Peter Sabata. On his, fourth stint with the UFC? Not only his second, okay. Sorry. He thought he was one of those guys who got released and brought back repeatedly. And actually, he was just one. He just, you know, fought infrequently and usually only on European cards. He's coming off a win over Nicholas Dalby. He's actually looked pretty good in his return. His win over Pavel Pavlak and Steve Kennedy were both solid. I mean, he got stopped by Kyle Noak, but, you know, Kyle Noak doesn't suck. The win over Dalby was pretty good. He's fighting Ben Saunders. Saunders coming off of that win over Court McGee that I thought he lost, to be perfectly honest. I thought he was the beneficiary of some lackluster judging as far as that fight goes. You know, Saunders is a veteran. He's been around for a long time, but man, the years and miles might be catching up to him. I don't know, the Volkman was pretty good. I mean, he's the only guy in the UFC to finish a fight with an omoplata, so. Ugh. Not a submission that should be given up. And just, he shouldn't catch that with a UFC caliber guy. The omoplata serves a lot. This is a lot of transitions, a lot of sweeps, initiating scrambles from that position. Even in, you know, jiu-jitsu tournaments, you know, there are submission grappling tournaments if you don't subscribe to pure jiu-jitsu. That's a low percentage submission. It's not really something that a UFC caliber MMA fighter should give up. So, you know, credit to him for catching it, but there's a reason Chris Heatherly is not with the UFC anymore. Ben Saunders has the possibility to have, you know, some really good fights. He's an action fighter, good long body kicks, especially. He's a big guy for welterweight, powerful left body kick. Sabata's a very good grappler. That's kind of where his bread and butter is. He likes to get close, get on top of you, work from your guard, either passing into a slightly better position or just kind of pounding on you from there. I'm not sure he wants to play around with the guard of Ben Saunders, because while his rubber guard is far from perfect, it takes a significant... You have to really know what you're doing if you're going to get through it. I mean, Patrick Cote was clearly well prepared to neutralize it when they fought. I'm not sure Sabata will be. I'm leaning Saunders here, but Saunders has, you know, had those history of inconsistencies and a lot of mileage on that guy as well. So I won't be surprised if Sabata wins, but I'm leaning towards Saunders. Welterweight. All right. My enthusiasm is like dead from this point out. I'm just warning everybody. Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. From Ghana. He's fought it for the UFC before. I need to find out exactly what his record is. Give me just a second here. He won his UFC debut. Yeah, he knocked out Charlie Ward in like... a minute. I remember that. It was Mousasi versus Hall fight, the rematch. Yeah. He's only got 7 fights. Jeez. I mean, that was a pretty crazy... Those two got brawling in a hurry. That fight lasted less than a minute. I remember that fight now. That was... Yeah. I am interested to see how he will perform against someone who's, you know, not that wild. He's fighting Omari Akhmedov. Akhmedov got so close to beating Zaleski Dos Santos before getting finished at the end of the third. Kind of the same thing with Sergio Moraes, too. He was really winning that fight. Coming off of a win over Kyle Noak, he beat Kyle Noak essentially out of the UFC. Noak retired. Akhmedov had a lot of potential, especially when he, you know, first debuted. Had a pretty good run. He only lost to Gunnar Nelson, and then, you know, had a few other impressive wins. Mats Nilsson beat up Brian Ebersole. But he's not really made that next step up, you know, and that's a problem. There's a lot unknown about Al-Hassan. Again, for a guy with only 7 fights in professionally, not in the UFC, but just total. I mean, he's got power pretty clearly, doesn't mind brawling, but I'm just leaning towards Akhmedov, especially if he can get him down. Akhmedov's more of a wrestler. So, yeah, again, not surprised either way here. There's a lot of potential in Al Hassan, and Akhmedov has maybe plateaued a bit as a competitor. So leaning Akhmedov, but I won't be shocked if Al Hassan takes that one. At welterweight, Oliver Enkamp. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. We'll fight Nordin Taleb. This was supposed to be Taleb versus Emil Weber Meek, who was the Norwegian guy who had that really fun fight against Jordan Mean. A bit of a showman. Picked up Jordan Mean as Mean was holding onto his arm. Yeah, Meek has some mech. Sorry, he's Norwegian. I believe that's pronounced mech. Not Meek. Had some good things going for him. Pity about that. Anyway, Enkamp is brand new to the UFC. He is, well, he's Swedish, so a local guy. His last fight, undefeated, 7-0. Let's see. Has he beaten anyone I know? No. Only gone the distance once. This is a tough one. I mean, Nordin Taleb's a pretty solid fighter. He's not great, but he's a very consistent guy. He's had that loss to Warley Alves. Oh, that was so stupid. Unfortunately, he learned from that. He's coming off of a decision loss to Santiago Ponzinibbio. That was a pretty good fight, actually. Those two threw down. I'll lean Taleb. I think he's enough of a technician that unless Enkamp is just, you know, really, really good, and I'm just completely unaware. And I mean, again, 7-0 is nothing to sneeze at by any stretch of the imagination. But I think Taleb has proven that he kind of belongs in the UFC, and I tend to lean towards him in that circumstance. So I'll lean towards Taleb for that fight. But there's a lot of, again, there's some good fighters out there that you're just not aware of. And at middleweight, Jack Hermansson will fight Alex Nicholson. Nicholson, again, famously, somehow got his jaw broken in that neck crank of Misha Sirkunov. He's fought for the UFC since then. He's done okay. Hermansson lost to Cesar Fajeya, beat Scott Askham, had that long winning streak that Fajeya snapped. Hermansson takes about a round to get going. I mean, he's a native. Hermansson, you know, was born in Sweden, moved to Norway, so very much in the area. I went over Carlos Vemola back in the day, too. Not back in the day, in 15. As opposed to Nicholson, who I need to remind myself specifically. Oh, yeah, he, again, lost to Sirkunov badly. Beat Devin Clark. Oh, that was a crazy one-round affair. He got hurt bad and came back. Oh, he lost to Sam Alvey. That was his last fight. Ugh, that's rough. I mean, I like Sam Alvey, you know, but I feel like if you're losing to Sam Alvey, maybe we know what your ceiling is. And again, I like Sam Alvey, so I don't mean that as a huge insult to the guy, but it means there's a lot. Sam Alvey's relatively straightforward. Again, if Hermansson can avoid being really slow in that first, because again, he takes a round to really kind of get going and find his rhythm. And during that first round, Alex Nicholson poses some problems. If he can get out of the first, or if he can kind of work through that slow starting issue, I'll lean towards Hermansson, but again, not completely sold on that one. And that's your main card. You guys want to know why I'm a little bit less than enthused about this event? Not only do I have to get up early, much earlier than usual, especially on a Sunday. Yeah, that's the main card. It's a series of fights, and I hope they're awesome. I mean, I hate kind of being down on cards on paper because it makes it seem like I want them to be bad. I don't. I do not like bad fights. I want these to be. I hope I have a great morning, not night in this instance, morning of fights. Hope I have a great morning of fights to cover, as I hate watching bad fights. I really do. They're easy to cover. Much easier than the really good ones, certainly. but there's not a whole lot there to get you excited on paper. So I'm hoping for, again, good fights. All right, as for the rest of the card, maybe there's something else here for you guys that you might be excited about. Pedro Munhoz will fight Damian Stasiak. This is a pretty good bantamweight fight, actually. Munhoz lost to Rivera. Back-to-back guillotine choke wins over Russell Doan and Justin Scoggins. That was actually impressive what he did to Scoggins. He lost that first round pretty badly, but just grabbed that in transition in the second. He's got a nice guillotine. Taking on Damian Stasiak. Stasiak on a two-fight winning streak in the UFC. I'm leaning Munhoz there, but I'm not sold on that one. Trevor Smith will fight Chris Camozzi. I mean, Camozzi's on that two-fight losing streak with losses to Talos Latus and Dan Kelly. Smith coming off of that loss to Andrew Sanchez. I'll lean Camozzi, but I'm probably going to be wrong there. At lightweight, Reza Madadi is replacing the injured. He was always supposed to fight. Anyway, Joachim Silva is replacing the injured Mirbek Taisimov against Reza Madadi. Silva's undefeated. I apologize for my dogs. Undefeated, Silva, he's defeated. He won the Ultimate Fighter Brazil, I believe. Yeah, season 4. No, he competed on the finale. He didn't actually win the season. Knocked out Andrew Holbrook July of last year, nearly a year since he fought. That's less than ideal. Anyway, against Reza Madadi, but Reza Madadi's not very good. Yeah, I'll go with Silva there again. I don't think Reza Madadi's all that good. So, and then at welterweight, Nico Musoke is fighting Bojan Veličković. Musoke's been out for a while. Yeah, over 2 years. He last fought when he was beaten by Albert Tumanov in January of 2015. Hasn't fought since. That's troubling. He had a good run going for a while. Then he lost to Gastelum, beat Yakovlev, lost to Tumanov. That layoff's significant. And Veličković lost to Sultan Aliyev. Really struggled with the grappling. To a draw with Graves. Veličković is one of those like gym heroes. He's great in the gym. He's great in a prettier fight. That's Bojan Mihailović, not Veličković. My apologies. I'll lean Veličković based on, general activity level, but I am not sold on that one by any stretch of the imagination. All right, and on Fight Pass, Darren Till will fight Justin Ayari. Actually, I think I'm leaning Ayari there. Double check. I want to make sure I remember who these guys are. Fought for the UFC before, I think. Till went to a draw with... He went to that draw with Dalby. That was a good fight. Beat Wendell Oliveira before that. And Ayari... Jim Wallhead. For guys whose names I couldn't remember off the top of my head, now that I think about who those are, that's not a terrible fight. I'm going to lean Ayari, actually. Till had some troubles with the pacing that Dalby put on him as the fight wore on, so. And Marcin Held, who got screwed by the judges when he fought Joe Lozon. Seriously, that was awful. I mean, he made like three boneheaded decisions against Diego Sanchez that cost him that fight as well. But he should have beaten Joe Loza. I've talked enough about the scoring of that fight. He's fighting for his job against Demir Hadzevich, whose name I am 90% sure I'm mispronouncing. Hadzevich is one of the Bosnian fighters. Not too many of those in the UFC. It's him and Bektic off the top of my head. There's probably one more. He got smoked by Mirsad Bektic in his UFC debut. Taisimov. Mirbek Taisimov just kind of ran him over. They tried twice to get him in there with Yusuke Kasuya. That fell apart twice. And now he's fighting Marcin Held. I mean, logically, it's Marcin Held. You know, Held has a better track record in general, more proven skill set. Yeah, I'll go with Held. I'm not at all confident in that particular pick necessarily, but I'll go with Marcin Held. Jeez. From on the main card to first fight of the night, needs a win. Marcin Held needs a win badly. All right. Again, that's UFC Fight Night 109. I hope the fights are good. I really do. I'm not anticipating it, but I'm certainly going to hope for it. So for those of you up at that hour and wanting to follow along with my coverage, again, I'm there first prelim until the main event next Sunday morning for Fight Night 109 in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com. So stop by, say hello. I do appreciate it. All right, what was the... Let's see if I remember some of the major news items from the last couple of weeks. Go into a whole lot of it last week. All right, let's... first up, UFC 213 is one that I've heard a lot about. The UFC is targeting for the main event of that pay-per-view a bantamweight title fight between Cody Garbrandt, the champion, and TJ Dillashaw, former champion. Those two are currently coaching opposite each other on the Ultimate Fighter season, whatever. Who cares? It's the redemption season. Incidentally, Larry Zonka is currently recapping that every week in the MMA Zone. So thank you very much, Larry. God bless you for the work you do. I'm not sure I could handle it. Just not sure I could deal with the with that. But they've been targeting again the main event of 213, which in and of itself is troubling. I mean that's a great fight. I do want to see that fight. I really don't want anything I'm about to say to come off like I don't want to see it. I do want to see that fight. There's ways those two match up that are incredibly interesting to me as an analyst and as a fan. But that's also the card that is supposed to cap off International Fight Week. You know, that's their July event. And it's a great fight. But I'm not sure how much of a drawing fight that is. And to have that as the main event of your big summer card is a little bit troubling in terms of, you know, drawing. The UFC's in a bit of a rough spot. I mean, 211 from a couple of weeks ago, which was a really good night of fights. That was a stacked card. We talked about that at length. I'm not sure that thing is going to break 500,000. Google Analytics seems to trend more in the 300,000 to 400,000 range. Even if it breaks 5, I'm relatively sure it's not going to break 6. Anyway, my actual point here is that Cody Garbrandt is, I believe, still in Germany getting treatments for a back injury. And again, there's plenty of legitimate, I don't consider myself a journalist, but there's plenty of journalists, Ariel Helwani, Brett Okamoto, Luke Thomas, you know, guys like that who, you know, report on this stuff for a living, who have talked about where he is, what he's doing. And for a fight that's only 2 months away, he's not even in like camp. You should still be in camp at this point. Which leads me towards kind of the conclusion that this thing's not going to happen. And I think most reasonable people are leaning that way. I don't know. Again, I don't know if what exactly is going to happen. Maybe Garbrandt decides, screw it, I'm going to fight anyway. He might. Who knows? But if Garbrandt does, you know, wind up, if it comes out in the next, you know, 3 weeks, Garbrandt, no, my back is too injured for this to happen. Don't be shocked at all. Co-main event for that event, I believe, is Nunez versus Shevchenko, which is another good fight. And it's another really good fight. I do want to see how that fight goes. Those two had an interesting three-round affair, an over five, and some of the improvements that both of them have made. It'll be, again, that's one I'm looking forward to. But again, how much are we going to draw here? There's 213's in a really awkward spot. There's no big, juicy fight necessarily on that card just yet. But the UFC is still promoting it as though Garbrandt and Dillashaw's signed for that fight and for that event. So, again, that's one of those that just don't be shocked if that doesn't happen, because, again, Garbrandt dealing with a pretty severe back injury and would be surprised. At this point, it's the point where I'd actually be a little bit surprised if he does make it. Also, for those of you who care about the ongoing Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather discussions, and normally Jeff and I have kind of avoided talking about this because there's a lot of non-stuff. Like, not nonsense, but, you know, a lot of hot air that's being blown into actual stories that I don't think they are. We finally have something actually worth kind of talking about here. Apparently, the UFC and Conor McGregor have come to terms for that fight. This was a pretty big hurdle, because Conor McGregor wants to box Floyd Mayweather. That's a massive payday. I know why he wants it. I really do. You know, regardless of the damage and issues it causes for the lightweight division, which it has and will continue to do. But that's the fight he wants. And he was prepared to go through some pretty lengthy stuff to get through it. You know, potentially suing, taking his contract into court, which the UFC does not want at this point. They really don't want the language of their contract scrutinized by a judge. Because there's some iffy stuff in there. Nothing illegal. Right? There's no, you know, blatantly illegal things to the best of my knowledge, but there's some gray areas that if they want to keep classifying fighters as independent contractors, they really at this point don't want them subject to intense legal scrutiny. So now they're going to go out of their way to make sure this happens without lawyers getting too heavily involved. But the UFC, and so what I imagine this means is the UFC and McGregor have come to terms on how much the UFC is going to make off of, you know, Conor's purse, because I guarantee you this, Floyd is not going to give the UFC a dime. Floyd Mayweather is going to make every penny that he's going to make, and he is going to share it with no one. Again, his pay-per-view points are going to be untouched by anyone else. His fee for this fight is going to be untouched by anyone else. And, you know, so on and so forth. So the UFC and McGregor have come to terms on, again, how much he makes, how much they make off of it. Now they have to get into co-promotion with Mayweather, who runs Mayweather Promotions. You know, the Money Team, I think, is what they call themselves. At least that's the group. I believe he runs Floyd Mayweather Promotions. He promotes himself. He is his own promoter. He cut out a lot of the, you know, the Don Kings and the Bob Arums of the world. So now he and the UFC, so now, you know, McGregor and the UFC are cool with this going forward. Now it's the UFC talking with, again, Floyd's team. This is a significant hurdle. There's a lot that's going to go into those discussions. There's going to be, you know, talks about what the split is for the actual pay-per-view, because, again, Floyd gets Floyd doesn't get points under the traditional system as we know it because he is the promoter. He just gets a cut. And frequently it's a significant cut because he is the pay-per-view king. He is the all-time pay-per-view boxing king. Nobody touches Floyd for buy rates in boxing. Even a lot of UFC events have really struggled. I mean, some of the big ones can be mentioned with some of his numbers, but a significant portion of them, nah, he is the king. So who gets what cut of the pay-per-view revenue is going to be brought up and have to be discussed. The date can only be in one place. Floyd has an exclusive contract because he also gets a percentage of everything that goes on in that venue when he's fighting. He gets a percentage of the tickets. He gets a percentage of the concessions. He gets a percentage of the merchandise. I mean, he set up a very sweet deal for himself. So there's a lot that's going to have to go on there. And believe it or not, there's more to it than that. A lot of the minutia that MMA fans take for granted, okay, has to be discussed for boxing matches. Gloves. Now, the weight of gloves is standard, but there's different styles. He and Canelo, when Floyd fought Canelo Alvarez, who's finally signed to fight Triple G. I mean, Triple G didn't look great in his last fight, and Canelo looked like a machine, but finally stopped ducking the man. When those two signed to fight, there was drama all the way up until like the actual night of the fight. There was drama the night of the fight about like the brand of gloves, what they would look like, who was watching the hands being wrapped from the other camp, who was actually wrapping the hand. All of this stuff that at a UFC event is just like boilerplate. You know, you're going to wear this. This guy from the commission is going to wrap your hands, et cetera. You know, all that stuff that just happens, you know, 24 times on the average UFC event, once per fighter, is going to have to be negotiated in this instance. And Floyd is not going to give a single inch that he does not believe, if he believes it's going to affect anything. I mean, again, this is... The UFC got themselves and Conor squared away, which is good internally for the UFC. It means there's not a lot of external strife potential, the Ali Act coming into play, McGregor taking them to court, et cetera, et cetera. That they've avoided that, which for them is huge. Now you got to deal with Floyd. There's still a significant number of steps that have to be taken before this becomes a reality. What's the line from Apollo 13? Now, for this to happen, there's 1,000 things that have to happen in order. We've accomplished number 6. Floyd is like, getting Floyd on board is going to be number like 692. There's that many things that are going to have to be checked off going forward for this thing. So I'm glad the UFC and Conor got squared away. But this isn't one of those things that I would necessarily hold my breath for. I think it'll happen. I really do. There's so much money involved in this. I mean, this event, you've got Conor, who's a significant pay-per-view draw. You've got Floyd, again, the all-time king. And like his last fight, maybe not so much, but in general. I mean, even his last fight, which was a somewhat disappointing buy rate, was significant. I mean, this is the guy for pay-per-view buys. So there's just too much money involved in that to be made in that fight at this point for it not to happen, barring, you know, a lot of the unforeseen. So, but Conor's now agreed with the UFC on terms for a potential fight. So a step has been made for those of you who care about that type of stuff. All right. I believe this is Jeff calling in. So, apologies if I'm wrong here. Jeff, how you doing this evening? How's your evening going?
It is Jeff. I'm sorry I'm a little late tonight, but I have a knee injury, so I can't train until I'm ready to fight GSP.
Bisping. Oh, that whole thing. All right.
So let's just have an interim title fight at middleweight.
You know, at this point, I'm okay with it. I mean,
why the hell not? Let's just get a backup title for every damn division.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like it, but I mean, really, and here's the other, my only thing about that, for those of you who don't know. I mean, GSP always said he wasn't going to fight until fourth quarter. Now, Bisping saying he has an injury.
He didn't always say that.
I think even when he announced, no, GSP always said, like, fourth quarter of 17 was his return date.
Bisping is saying
he's got an injury that is going to prevent him from fighting until, again, fall at the earliest, I think. So now there's talks about Robert Whittaker versus Yoel Romero for the interim middleweight title. Because interim belts. Yuck. I love that fight. I mean, I really love that fight, but... That is just not a happy state of affairs. All right, Jeff, I already gave my preview for Fight Night 109, so any fights on that card that you're... That kind of stand out to you that you really want to talk about?
Gustafsson Teixeira is a great fight. It's an interesting fight. I guess we're going to see how motivated Gustafsson is in getting back to the title because, I mean, there's still – I mean, look, the division's been gutted. There are still opportunities for a guy like him. And there's still interest in a rematch for John Jones if John Jones can consistently stay out of trouble. They match up very well. They both have a lot of power. They're both big dudes. They both have fairly decent MMA wrestling. I don't know. I think maybe Teixeira is the better boxer, but we'll see. It's an interesting fight. I'm picking Gustafsson, though. How did you land on this one, Robert?
I am solidly Gustafsson in this one. I think Teixeira is entirely too predictable when it comes to his striking.
Interesting.
He's all overhand right into left hook. That is his like primary, secondary, tertiary striking setup.
Right. So let me see. Gustafsson, though, he only fought once last year against Cam Blukevich. Teixeira has been a little more active. And I don't know if that's really going to change very much. But I guess, do you think Gustafsson's still motivated to become a contender again after his disappointments with Jones and Cormier?
I don't know. That's the big question here. I think he is. I mean, there are people who swear up and down he won both of those fights. So he's clearly a caliber of fighter to contend with them.
Yeah. He's an elite fighter, no doubt.
If he shows up lazy, he could get clipped here. I mean, I will say that. But
he didn't show up against Anthony Johnson at all. So...
I think he just got rocked too early in that fight and didn't quite expect it. Johnson hits like a truck, so.
And so does Teixeira, though. Teixeira's a hard hitter, too.
Yeah, Teixeira, he hits hard. I don't think he's on the same level of Johnson in terms of raw power.
No. And I'm just going to go ahead and pick Gustafsson. I like that fight. It's a great main event. Uzdemir
and Sirkunov is the co-main event.
Mainly because of Sirkunov, and he definitely looks like he could be... I mean, we really desperately need prospects in this division, Robert. So, Sirkunov...
Little Nog is still number 10 in the division.
Yeah, but we lost so many... I mean, we lost Krylov, we lost Bader, we lost Phil Davis in the last couple of years... Those are huge blows to this division.
Yeah.
Maybe not all of them were the most exciting fighters, but I mean they were solid. I mean they were legitimate top 10 fighters and arguably top 5. And I think even if they weren't the most exciting, they could have been potential guys to put in there against Cormier or Jones in title fights in the future, don't you think? Because no matter what. Those guys are going to need guys to fight. And if you run out of solid contenders, I like Sirkunov here. Uzdemir did not impress me at all in any of his – that fight with Ovince St. Preux was horrible. But we'll see. Maybe he'll have a better performance here Of course, I'm picking Cirkunov. Ben Saunders Sabata is a, I mean, that's a fun little fight. Sabata's done well in his second UFC run. You know, he hasn't been a world beater, but he's done well for himself. Saunders is good on the ground, good kickboxer, a little inconsistent, but I think this is a winnable fight for him. I like that fight. Let's see, Akhmedov versus Al Hassan. So those are the main ones for me. Let's see, going down the prelims. Munoz versus, Damian Stasiak. That's a decent fight. Decent bantamweight match. Trevor Smith. And I think Trevor Smith versus Chris Camozzi is a decent middleweight fight. You know, both those guys are decent fighters. They're exciting fighters. They're just not, you know, like elite-level talent. Excuse me. And Mason Madotti versus Joaquin Silva. I think that's a decent fight. Marcin Held is he's getting one last chance because technically got robbed against Joe Lozon. So
he got screwed in that fight, but he better beat Hadzovic.
He's not that good of a fighter. I mean, it just goes to show guys who can. Look, it's good for you guys to have a smaller pawn, but guys, you know, who excel in the smaller pawn don't always do well on the big stage. So we'll see there. It's a bit of
and
a
we actually lost
card,
the fight on this card I was most looking forward to.
Which one was that?
Reza Madotti was supposed to fight Mirbek Taisimov.
I'm a
pretty big believer in Taisimov in general, but
it's a bit of a top heavy card, but it's a Sweden card. It's a free TV card, so there you go.
It's a very early morning card.
Yeah, but at least the main event is a very relevant fight, and we have a couple other relevant fighters up and down this card, and a couple decent matchups. So I think that's good, but you know. Look, depending on how things go, Robert, Teixeira, Gustafsson, they could be back in the title mix later this year or early next year.
At this point, I'd be surprised if they weren't. That's just how that division has gone.
Look, we just lost Johnson. We lost Bader. We lost Phil Davis. We lost Krylov. We lost a lot of solid health. We're in a position where Shogun could be back in the title mix very soon. Shogun Hua, which I never thought would happen, but go figure. So that's what we got. It's a decent card. A decent card overall, not a great card, but I really like the main event. And I'm just curious to see where Gustafsson's head is at. Robert, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, those are my main picks for the card, pretty much.
Yeah, this is a card I sincerely hope overperforms, because, again, there's not a whole lot to really get excited about, but I hope it delivers in terms of action, because, again, I love good fights. I hate bad fights. I never like bad fights.
I feel you.
All right, so moving on to news. I think I had touched briefly on, you know, Garbrandt still being getting treatments for his back with, you know, a theoretical fight with Dillashaw, you know, 2 months away. And then the UFC and McGregor coming to terms on a potential boxing match versus Floyd Mayweather.
You broke my heart, Dana White. You broke my heart. Here's something. So Michael Bisping, what I was referencing earlier, Dana White a little while back said, I'm sorry, but we can't wait for you, GSP. We're not going to wait until November or later to book you in a fight with Bisping. So we're going to book Bisping versus Romero. And I'm like, great. this is what we should be doing right now. We have no idea when GSP is going to be ready to fight. And then Bisping does his stupid little podcast, Believe You Me. That's the name of his podcast, by the way. And he says, well, I can't straighten out my knee. I can't bend my knee in training. So this is a blessing in disguise. So I'm still going to fight GSP. So I don't know why Dana White, you know, goes on TV and says these things without talking to either Bisping or his manager or his management company. And I feel like there's some sort of disconnect here. And what maybe Dana White was trying to put pressure on GSP, and that was a tough negotiating ploy. Either way, this is none of this works to me. I cannot stand. Look, Bisping is—he's ducking every top contender at middleweight. I get you want this payday. I get you want this fight, but you're the middleweight champion. Just because they gave they give all these things to Conor McGregor, I think it does, just because of that doesn't mean like you should get every fight you want as the champion. Tyron Woodley acts really entitled too, and that's why no one likes Tyron Woodley. You know, Tyron Woodley's. He has one draw and one really close split decision under his belt as champion, okay? And, I mean, he's talking about who moves the needle and saying Damian Maia doesn't move the needle. Tyron Woodley, you don't move the damn needle, sucker. You don't move any needle at all. And if that was the criteria for how champions should fight certain contenders, then you never would have gotten a title shot against Robbie Lawler, who was not interested in fighting you at all. So all of this to me is garbage, and I'm not saying the UFC isn't partly responsible for this because of the Conor. They are. They kind of created this whole monster with the Conor McGregor situation, but now we have every champion just trying to get out of every fight, and it's a hot mess to me, and I can't stand it. So now we have Bisping doing this garbage. We have Tyron Woodley doing it, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I
am I
said
wrong
it at the
here, Robert? Am I being emotional?
A little bit. I don't think you're wrong. I mean, those two things are not mutually exclusive by any stretch of the imagination.
I am emotional about this, but I feel I have righteous emotion.
I said when they announced this fight, when they had the press conference and said it's Bisping versus GSP, I didn't like it. In fact, when I first heard that idea floated, I was in such a bad spot that I was in a very negative spot with the sport and a few other things in my personal life at the time, and I just about threw up my hands and said, screw it, I'm done. Fortunately, you know, a few things evened out, you know, again. I never liked the fight. Not for the title. When they announced it and said, I mean, again, George always said, again, when I first heard about this, George, my understanding was George said, fourth quarter of 17. That's my return date. That's what he said. And I always felt, and I didn't like the fight putting the division on hold for that long. You had three or four legitimate contenders waiting for a shot at that belt. And I mean, if they had been able to do that fight...
You see, Robert, MMA is like the stock market. Bisping stock is at its highest.
George. Anyway, if they'd been able to do this in a timely fashion, I wouldn't have liked it. Let me be very clear about that. But in a timely fashion, in a year when their buy rates are significantly suffering... I could understand it. Again, I wouldn't have liked it, but I could understand it. Unfortunately, George wasn't BSing
but
when he said no.
But what about Bisping? He's like, oh, my knee's hurt. I can't train right now. So I can't train until this fight would happen anyway in November or some garbage.
I mean,
it's
I don't
joke.
Think he's – I don't – let me say this.
And you know
I don't
what?
Necessarily
I
think he's
Robert,
lying.
Respect for him and what he's done and accomplished. And I mean, to be in this, you know, to put his nose to the grindstone like he did and to toil through this sport and never, like, give up his aspirations to become champion. I mean, a lot of guys in his position probably would have called it quits already. I mean, look at Anthony Johnson. But Bisping stuck to it, and he was the plan B, but he took an opportunity, and he seized on it and became champion. And that's what you have to do. I feel like that's all that matters. It doesn't matter what we think or say, but if you can go in there and fight and just do your job, you can prove everyone wrong. And he did that. And I have such great respect for him doing that, but I do not respect all this just like, oh, I want a big payday. I understand it, but like, you know, you're still the champion and there are guys for you to fight. And I just feel like you, even on some level, I can understand why he wanted that Dan Henderson fight, as dumb as it was. But they gave him that fight. All right, so you got the Dan Henderson fight. Now it's time for you to fight, like, the real, you know, the really scary guys of this division, man. I mean, I feel like if you really feel like you deserved a big payday or something – I feel like you got what you deserved when you got that fight with Rockhold. They gave you that opportunity, did they not? And I mean, so I, what is the problem now? I don't understand what it is I know he wants that GSP fight and the big payday, but like, it's not there. It's not there, man. And
look, if he weren't injured and defended the title again within the next 2 months, 2 to 3 months.
Is he really even injured? Is he really even injured? Come on.
I mean, I suppose that depends how we define injury in some respects. I mean, when he says his knee's jacked, I believe that. I really do. And maybe the only reason he was okay fighting Bisping was he knew he could get it, you know, either fixed with physical therapy or surgery and get through a camp and then be ready to fight by the end of the year. And as long as that was the plan, it was a non-issue. So he didn't feel like, you know, disclosure becomes becomes an issue. And now that, you know, they're talking about a fight in a much more reasonable time frame, he doesn't feel he can do it. I mean, again, I find that to be a reasonable set of circumstances. I question whether or not this is the type of injury.
Why is this the first we're hearing of injury? Why is this the first we're hearing of a knee injury from him?
Because there was not even talks of him fighting in July until
He has a weekly podcast. You know, why is he not communicating with the UFC? Why is he and his management? Why is his manager not calling the UFC and saying, okay, this is what we're looking at. He has a knee injury. This is his time frame of when he can possibly train again. Like,
I don't know. I mean, why did Dan Henderson not tell anyone he tore his MCL until, you know, a week before he was supposed to fight John Jones? Who knows?
This is on Dana White, too, because Dana White's going on there saying, all right, we're done waiting for GSP, putting this fight together. We want Bisping to go ahead and fight Romero. And apparently he's done this without even talking to Bisping and his management or even asking them.
Or Romero and his management or freaking anyone. I mean, yeah, if you don't announce Bisping versus GSP,
I'm not saying Dana White is a bad promoter. I mean, he's been in this game a long time, and he's clearly helped the UFC get to where it is. But, like, I just don't understand these moves at all. It's sort of like I don't understand why Bellator is on Spike TV for their events, and Spike TV and Viacom refuse to put a live sporting event on live, and they give us these stupid tape delay feeds, which – it's absolute garbage, okay? And there's no excuse for that anymore in 2017.
I don't get it either. And honestly, this might be my stance here. If they make Whitaker versus Romero for the interim belt, I might just call that guy the actual champion, because either of them will have actually gone through a murderer's row of competitors to get to each other and fight for a belt. I mean, honestly, that's, in many respects, you could argue that's the more legitimate title than...
I'm fine with that fight, just from the perspective of Bisping's not fighting any contenders. He's doing all this nonsense right now. And to me, those two are the two rightful contenders now anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not... That's why... All right. Just make that fight. Put it on International Fight Week. Both those guys are worthy contenders, and let's just keep things moving for right now.
Yeah, again, interim title nonsense aside, I do love that fight. That's a great fight.
All right, well, here's another great fight that did get announced this weekend. Anthony Pettis, his little brother Sergio Pettis, will be fighting Brandon Moreno at UFC Fight Night 114 in Mexico. So that's
a
great
fight.
It might be a little – it's a tough fight, but look, Sergio Pettis, if he wants to fight for the title, he needs a tough fight. And it might be a little too early for a guy like Brandon Moreno, but he could be a force in this division too. So here's my question. Brandon Moreno were to win against Sergio Pettis, which let's face it is very possible because he's fighting Sergio Pettis, would it be too early for him to get a title shot against Mighty Mouse?
Yes and no. Yes, because it's only four fights into his UFC deal. He's 23, 24? I forget how old Brandon Moreno is. My apologies. He's not over 30. Of that, I am sure. And, you know, I think DJ would be a significant bridge too far for him. But at the same time, I mean, the name being tossed around right now for DJ's next fight is Ray Borg. Now, I like Ray Borg. He's got great wrestling. He's a great scrambler. There's a lot good about his game, but he's missed weight twice. It's just Johnson has beaten everybody else.
Well, but look, Moreno submitted Luis Smolka, submitted Dustin Ortiz. Pettis is sort of the – just by process of – everyone Johnson is beaten. Pettis is basically the guy to beat right now, because he has a 3-fight winning streak. Look, there's Benavidez, but Benavidez had that question
injured and lost
over
twice.
And he lost to Johnson twice already in title fights. So it's really just come down to a fight like Pettis and Moreno. That being said, it's a great matchup, and it's a great test for Moreno, and really for Pettis as well, because...
Yeah, Pettis has never fought a guy with the pace and scrambling that Moreno's going to bring.
But Moreno's a surging contender right now, and And here's the other thing, Rob. Pettis is a young guy, too. He's only 23. But the problem is that he's Anthony Pettis' little brother, and he's sort of always been in the shadow of Anthony Pettis. He's had to deal with that his whole career. And second of all, he's never really been – he came in and people thought he'd be a contender, and he sort of struggled to get to that level. So there's that. And I don't know. I like the fight a lot. It's a great fight, all things considered.
Yeah, it is. That's a really good fight. I'm looking forward to that one.
So it's a good match. Honestly, I like it a lot better than Pettis versus Cejudo, but just goes to show you. Any other news items we want to go over?
Let me see. We missed last week, and I don't remember if there was anything major that had come up that we wanted to talk about there. Let's see. Various results. We could talk about the Bellator card. I mean, tape delay notwithstanding, which is
I mean, Roy McDonald submitted Paul Daly.
He smoked Paul Daly. That was...
Paul Daly sucks. Paul Daly's linear.
He's a very linear fighter.
He's a kickboxer.
And Rory, I mean, he finally looked kind of good. I mean, he had issues with the Thompson fight. Some of that was stylistic, but he finally looked pretty good in a fight, so...
I mean, Rory's historically been inconsistent, though. Undeniably, I think.
Some of that was the unfortunate pacing of his career.
Daly's not a tough fighter to look good against, and he's easy to dominate. He's always had poor takedown defense, poor grappling defense. So there's that.
Yeah.
After the fight, Paul Daly had a choreographed brawl with Michael Venom Page, so it looks like that fight's going to get booked. So
that should be an interesting fight.
Choreographed WWE brawls.
That's not new. They've been doing that for a while.
Yes.
As far as that card, actually, my biggest surprise, Linton Vassell submitting Liam McGarry was a big surprise to me, the way that that went down. Not that he won necessarily,
was way overrated.
I don't think he was
overrated
so much as he's failed tremendously to evolve his game.
King, you know who the most underrated guy in Bellator was? Probably King Mo, who could never beat Emmanuel Newton for that matter. And that obviously destroyed a lot of Bellator's plans. Because he could never be their top star that they wanted. Check Congo. He won a split decision.
Oh,
I like Congo.
That fight.
Congo's never going to be that guy, but, you know, he's Congo.
That fight was awful.
Okay. Kevin Ferguson Jr., the son of the late Kimbo Slice, he made his Bellator debut and he defeated DJ Griffin via knockout. So what do you think? Is Baby Slice the next big thing for MMA, Robert?
He looked about as good as any other fighter who's got two professional fights under their belt. I'm not about to make a prediction based on
that. I've never even heard of the guy he fought. I don't know if he's a guy.
Me neither.
See, he's 1-1. The only reason he's fighting is because of who his dad is. You know.
The only reason he's in Bellator is because of who his dad is.
I'm not saying he should ever fight, but Bellator is probably the best place for him. The guy he beat doesn't even have any professional fights. He was making his pro MMA debut with this fight. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, look, if part of Bellator's cards are going to be devoted to guys who are, you know, less than five fights professionally, I don't hate that as a business decision because Bellator can't be the UFC. So if you want to, in some respect, be a place where you can grow a debuting fighter or a young prospect, that's not the worst thing in the world in and of itself. It really isn't.
I wouldn't even call him a prospect. Either.
Again, debuting fighters to prospects, somewhere in that. He's a debuting fighter, so.
Whatever.
I don't like Bellator as a general rule, but if that's going to be part of their business model, you know, going forward.
How can they not have live fights at this point?
My understanding is that's on Spike. Because Spike did the same thing with the UFC.
Spike owns the company, Robert. How could they not want live fights?
I don't know. This is one of those things I have no idea. But even when the UFC was on Spike, if they did overseas shows, they were frequently shown on tape delay. This is something that Spike as a channel or Viacom as their owners, that's their decision.
Ridiculous.
I agree. I mean,
freaking ridiculous.
I mean, even Scott Coker got a little bit hot when asked about it. And, you know, getting Scott Coker to show emotion is kind of like getting blood from a stone.
Okay. So, The UFC has apparently made a deal to let Conor McGregor fight Floyd Mayweather in a boxing fight. God help me, this is going to happen.
There's too much money. At this point, there's just too much money involved for it not to happen for all parties. I mean, Floyd's going to take
that it's
a...
happening. I hate that it's happening. I hate that Conor McGregor, I feel like he's avoiding the fights for him that are there, the tougher fights for him that are there at lightweight, just like I feel like he did at featherweight. And whatever.
Money. This thing will draw stupid amounts of money. That's the only reason it's happening.
I'm offended that this would even draw money, Robert.
Fair enough.
Does that make me a bad person?
No.
It offends me that people would even buy into this, but whatever.
Look, people are still funneling billions of dollars into the Transformer franchise. What are you going to do?
Okay, so it's not official, but it's a step closer.
Yeah.
To like
McGregor
happening.
And the UFC have come to terms. Now the UFC gets to have the joy of negotiating with Floyd Mayweather's team. Good luck with that. Enjoy your migraine.
You know what? I love this Jose Aldo Max Holloway fight.
That is
an awesome fight.
That's a great fight.
And it's a great card, and that's a legit. Even though both guys lost to McGregor, it's a legit title fight. It's as legit of a fight you can get at featherweight as possible. So, I love that fight. So I just want to say that.
I do too. That fight and the thought of it is sustaining me through the next 2 months of MMA because
it gets a little rough. We break down that fight. I can't wait to see what happens in that fight. And I'm just going to tell you right now, this is our preview to the preview, Robert. I'm picking Holloway. I'm going all in on Holloway for this fight. He's my guy.
This fight reminds me of my new dream fight that I don't think will ever happen, but I have two dream fights in my head now.
What's that?
Well, one of them's a 7-round fight between Mighty Mouse and Frankie Edgar at bantamweight.
Okay.
Because I would love, and that's just me. I would love that fight.
Okay,
and I don't think 5 rounds is enough.
All right.
And again, never going to happen. The other is Max Holloway versus Tony Ferguson at lightweight.
That is a good fight, too.
I mean, what those two do and how they do it and the way they match up is something I salivate over as a fan.
It's just Holloway's improvement level and just the way he does, I feel like he shows new parts of his game each time out. And the way he just bullied Anthony Pettis,
finished him in the third round. I mean, Anthony Pettis had never been finished. Max Holloway did it inside of 3 rounds. It was incredible.
Holloway looked like what Pettis used to in that fight, you know? Pettis used to be just this really dynamic, really creative fighter. And now I feel like Holloway is sort of doing all those. Anyway, I love that fight. I'm all in on Max Holloway beating Jose Aldo. And just because, it's sort of like the Tony Ferguson thing. I haven't really been led wrong by picking either of those guys recently. I've been led astray before, but not with these two. And Holloway, I can't pick against him. And even against a guy like Jose Aldo, who's generally unbeatable against some of the best in the business, but I like Holloway a lot in this fight. And
I'm really looking forward to next week when I can kind of sink my teeth into that one.
I am more excited about this fight than maybe just about any other fight we know about this year. So.
Yeah, no, that's a tremendous fight. And
right.
It's really kind of the fight holding together that card. That card is.
I'm related to MMA. Alien Covenant was garbage. all you idiots who gave me a hard time in the comments of my review, shut up, grow up, first of all. The movie's not that good. Like, someone actually lectured me, like, this movie's about things. It's about the dangers of creating artificial intelligence, not, like, superhero movies. You know, I kind of remember a little movie called Avengers Age of Ultron, Robert, where they create a killer AI robot in that movie. So isn't Age of Ultron about the dangers of creating AI as well?
A little. Age of Ultron, I felt, was more about Tony Stark continuing to be an enormous douchebag.
Just the pretension that, like, this movie is, like, about things or some garbage or something. And obviously more highbrow than a comic book movie. I hate that. And I hate any mindset relating to that. And Alien Covenant isn't even doing that well. And I feel like a lot of other critics were seduced by Ridley Scott doing a sci-fi movie with the aliens in it again. Because the movie's, it's really not that good. It's got good bells and whistles. It's technically competent. It looks good. Dumber than dumb. It's all the problems you had with Prometheus are, like, I feel they're magnified in Covenant. Have you seen this film?
I have. I saw it yesterday.
What did you think?
You'll have to listen to my review on Tuesday to find out. I'm not giving that away yet.
Well, if it's anything like your Guardians of the Galaxy review, I'm sure I'm going to enjoy it and have a great time. But check out my review of Alien Covenant. I also did the Dolby Atmos experience. Didn't really like the movie better, but I definitely like Dolby Atmos. It's not that expensive, especially compared to IMAX, and you get the highest quality picture and sound, and you get those power seats, which are amazing. If you ever go to AMC, they have Dolby Atmos, and there's a movie you want to see, I would recommend it. So,
let's see if there's an AMC around here. All right. I will be sure to give your review a read. I haven't read it yet, but now that I've seen the movie, I will. So many thanks for that.
Thank you, Robert.
Next week.
Michael Bisping, stop faking and fight Yoel Romero or Robert Whittaker, you faker. Thank you, Robert.
Next week we get to have fun. We'll be reviewing a show that happened earlier in the day and previewing UFC 212, so that should be a lot of fun. Thank you, as always, Jeff. Look forward to talking to you next week. All right, as for me, again, as mentioned, Mark Radlich and I will be reviewing Alien Covenant this Tuesday. Hopefully, Mark and I, we were supposed to review King Arthur, Legend of the Sword last week, but Mark was rather ill and unable to join me. So there's me talking to myself for about a little over an hour, I think, closer to 90 minutes, maybe. You can get my thoughts on that particular film in the archives. Again, we'll be talking Alien Covenant this week, which I'm interested to hear Mark's take. I have mine. I know, and I've seen it. I know what I think about it. It should be interesting. So tune in for that. Sunday morning, again, first fight is 9:30 a.m. Eastern time next Sunday. UFC Fight Night 109. I'll have coverage in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com, so stop by and say hello. And this show will be at the same time of 8 p.m. Eastern Standard that evening, previewing UFC 212. Thanks again for tuning in, you guys. It's much appreciated. I'm perpetually humbled that there's people out there who can tolerate the sound of my voice. So thank you all very much. I'll see you next week. Until then, please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.